I've ruptured my femoral artery. I ruptured my bowel. I've broken both my shoulders. I've broken both my arms. I've broken both my wrists. I've been badly burnt twice. I've broken both my hands. I had to have laser surgery on a thing because I hit my head so hard that I got a thing called a rugby ball eye from the inside out. I've split my head open more times than I can remember. But apart from that, I feel pretty good.
Hello and welcome to Cunning Stunts with myself, David Holmes. Ever since I was a teenager, I've been performing as a stuntman on feature films. And for 10 years, I was the stunt double for Harry on the Harry Potter films. Whilst preparing a stunt for the final film in the series, I suffered a spinal injury that had the effect of paralysing me from the chest down and ending my career. However, in the decades since the accident, my love of stunts, the stunt performer community and movies has never wavered. So I'm starting this podcast to highlight and pay tribute to the amazing performers who make up the stunt community, giving you first-hand accounts of the work that goes into crafting some of the mind-blowing action scenes you've seen on films such as Star Wars, Mission Impossible, and The Avengers, while also revealing the grit, talent, and bravado of those that risk their lives in the name of entertainment. One quick note, the other voice you'll hear occasionally is Dan Radcliffe, one of my best friends and acting double on the Harry Potter films. He's been sitting in on some of these interviews. Right, first off on Cunning Stunts, we've got the legend that is Derek Lee. Derek has over 500 credits to his name, including the Bond movies, Warhorse, Gladiator, the Top Gear TV series, and many, many more. He has also dealt with a number of injuries in his career, and is even in a medical textbook for having survived something nobody else has. His story about how he survived that injury and the surreal way he saw the world for 2 weeks as he was fighting for his life is something really special. All right, that's enough of the intro. Here's our interview with Derek. Hope you enjoy.
Thanks for joining us today. Do you mind giving us your name and how long you've been involved in the stunt industry?
Derek Lee, and I think it's 30 years. I left drama school in 1987, and that's when I sort of started in the industry.
Do you remember when you first met Dave?
I did.
Where was that?
I met him at Shepperton Studios. And do you know what? The Potters were never filmed at Shepperton, were they?
I think they did a couple of weeks there on the third one, maybe. We were in and out of there, yeah.
Oh, but maybe it was then. I remember being introduced to him and I just liked him from the word go, you know what I mean? And I'm not just saying that because I remember him, oh, what do you want to drink? Want a cup of tea? And he was doing... there was nothing aloof about him at all, and I just thought, oh, he's brand new. And then, obviously, then he ended up doubling you.
And... Yeah.
And how did you hear about the stunt industry, Dale?
Do you know what I didn't hear about it? I just wanted to do it. One day, I wasn't allowed in for... They didn't let me do any exams at school, basically, and I ended up hitchhiking to the south of France at 15 and was working on the beaches and then went from there to Spain. And this happened for about 4 or 5 years, and... One, at least I had the brains to realise that I couldn't be a 40-year-old beach boy. So one day I just thought to myself, what do you want to do? To be honest with you, I met an actor in Spain called Lee Whitlock. And at the time he was in a thing called Shine on Harvey Moon. And he just said to me, why don't you try the acting? So I went back, saw a friend of mine. She was going to a drama school. Went for an audition there because I needed an equity card to get on the register. And in those days, it was like Catch 22. They didn't just give them out. You couldn't work without a card. You couldn't get any work unless you had a card, sort of thing. So that's how it all started. Went there. The woman that owned the drama school had her own theatre. So I did stage management and filled it up from there.
Can you tell us some of the qualifications that you used to get on the stunt register?
Well, motocross. That's my background. And I used to box. So I already had two. Then I went. I thought I'd better get a bit of spatial awareness in there. So I did trampolining, highboard and springboard diving, horse riding, did the stunt riding horse test, swim, I've always been a strong swimmer. What else to do? Oh, judo. Yeah, because I thought before all this MMA started, I thought I'd get a bit of groundwork involved, learn how to twist people up a bit.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Nice. And can you just list off some of the films that you worked on, Dale?
Titanic, Saving Private Ryan, four bomb films, First Mission Impossible, First Mummy, and I've done about 72 films. Yeah. Features.
Now, but you've always quite heavily featured though, aren't you, Dale? You've
got harping back to the drama school, inadvertently, I think it did me a favour going there. That's how I got my equity card. And I've played some good little parts in some films, you know what I mean? I've been able to perform the stunt and play the part sort of thing.
I mean, Titanic, you were the...
Leading stoker.
Leading stoker downstairs in the ship. And Private Ryan, you're the first guy to take the bullet on the beach, aren't you?
That's right. It was only a fraction of the film, but it's unbelievable how many people are into that film and how many people have recognised me from that one little bit, you know what I mean?
And some of the highlights of your stunt career, what films have you loved working on?
I think Titanic has got to be a highlight because it wasn't a testosterone-filled, like, war film, do you know what I mean? There was as many women on the boat as there was men. There were some real characters on there. And I really enjoyed the part as well, do you know what I mean? And it just had a feel. It was all night work. We were in Mexico. I love travelling. We used to go to San Diego on the nights off. And because you'd been up all night working... You could go. You didn't run out of energy for going out all night. Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah. I was younger then, so. But that was a good film to work on.
Have you got a favourite stunt that you've done, looking back on your career, that you watch and go, that was great?
Well, I broke the world record for towing the caravan. It was Matt.
Top Gear, wasn't it?
No, Fifth Gear.
Fifth Gear.
And then I tried to beat my own record on Top Gear as the Top Gear stuntman, but. That was quite an achievement.
Yeah.
Because the fellow that had set the record, he was an Australian, and he'd broken his back when he tried to do it. So
what was the record? What were you towing?
I was towing a caravan with a car, like you do. And I had to start about a mile away from the ramp. The ramp was 18 foot high and 60 foot long, and we had 200 cars as catcher cars. But I could only dress them at a certain point. So I thought to myself, if I can't, the record was 122 feet or something like that. And I jumped 187 feet. So I thought to myself, where do we start the cars? So I started them 80 foot away from the ramp. I thought, if I can't jump 80 foot, I shouldn't be here. So I landed about four cars away from the end of the catching rig. But come away sort of unscathed and... got the record, so that was good. No one's ever beaten it since.
And you've obviously done quite a lot of car stunts.
Plenty of fire jobs.
High falls,
yeah. I think 100 foot is probably the highest I've done off of a viaduct.
That's pretty high.
That's a long way down.
That's a long way.
it was on a thing called Bodyguards, and I was doubling Sean Pertwee. Turned up and there was loads of crosses and flowers at the bottom of it, and it was a notorious suicide spot.
So oh, lovely.
That made me feel good.
But, brilliant.
That went all right.
And other highlights of your career, some of the locations you've been to? You say you like to travel.
Yeah, Mexico. I've sort of done the Morocco and Tunisia a bit. I wouldn't put them up there. I worked in Canada on Jumper for a few months. That's a nice country, Canada. I've been to Japan a couple of times, Tokyo, did a little tour around Japan as well. Where else have I been? I'll walk out the door and I'll remember them all.
Would you mind talking us through some of the various injuries? You can just start at the bottom or start at the top.
How much film you want on camera? So, I've broken both my legs. I've got a total knee replacement. I've smashed my pelvis in front and back. The metalwork's still in there. I've ruptured my femoral artery. I ruptured my bowel. I've broken both my shoulders. I've broken both my arms. I've broken both my wrists. I've been badly burnt twice. I've broken both my hands. I had to have laser surgery on a thing because I hit my head so hard that I got a thing called a rugby ball eye from the inside out. I've split my head open more times than I can remember. But apart from that, I feel pretty good. I'm lucky to be here.
It's extensive.
I've gone into a medical journal because no one's ever survived one of the injuries that I've had before. So,
Can you tell us about that, if you don't mind? Yeah.
I had a malfunction on a motocross bike, rehearsing for a commercial, and I hit a tree about 50 miles an hour and snapped myself in half, basically. So a few of those injuries happened at once.
Right.
I nearly bled out at the track because I snapped my femur clean in half, and when I woke up, my boot was by the side of my head. And a mate of mine who's on the track a little bit further than me, because this was on a motocross track, was just practicing, just getting myself up to speed for this commercial. And the next thing I see him looking at me like that, I said, straighten my leg out, because it was freaking me out. And he said, I don't want to move you. I said, just, Jim, straighten my leg out. Anyway, he's gone like that and pushed my leg over. And what we didn't know at the time, or what I know now, was where the broken bone severed the artery. And it was like someone pouring sort of half a bucket of warm water down your trousers. And the first thing I said to him was, I'm going to bleed to death. And he said, I can't see any blood. By that time, someone else had turned up and they said, well, you're not bleeding, but it was all internal. So it took an hour for the paramedics to turn up. They didn't have any ketamine, which you need to slow the heart down to stop the bleeding. And they didn't have a spinal board. So they called in the air ambulance from Tooting. By the time they got there, I was going in and out of consciousness. People were going, and I was just so, I'm done here. My wife had turned up with my youngest daughter, and I was trying to sort of hold it down because I didn't want to scare them to death, but I honestly thought I was just going to die at the side of the track. And I remember them putting the ketamine in, and the air ambulance people, they were absolutely brilliant. They took over, and they pushed me into the helicopter, and I was thinking, oh, this is tiny, but I didn't know I was going inside a pod. That was one of the, my last thoughts was how small the helicopter was, but I was in some sort of a pod.
Oh, right.
So they rushed me through A&E. The first thing they did was cauterise the artery and mend the femur. Then they opened me up the next day to do the pelvic injury, because I was caved that in, and I stunk of faeces. They'd missed the fact that I'd ruptured my bowel because I was in a gurney and I was all braced together. So they missed that. But now I've been poisoning myself for 24 hours. So I got septicemia, and I was in intensive care for 2.5 weeks, basically fighting for my life. In this mad world, walking through this house where there was all these different caricatures, and one side of the house was just like a grey car park. And it was just like a natural instinct. My body was telling me, if you step outside there, you're going to die. So just keep ploughing through this house. And it was like one room I'd walk in there. It was a 1970s police interrogation room. And I could actually smell them, you know, they said smoke in the 70s. They turned around, they all started looking at me, and all their faces started melting. And instead of getting scared, I got a beautiful family, and I just wasn't ready to go, you know. Yeah. So I went out of that room, walked through another room, I'd turn around a corner and be face to face with those, you know, like the people off of Pirates of the Caribbean, the ones with all the... And I'd just look at them like that and just walk off and keep walking. Anyway, 2.5 weeks I was in intensive care, and one day I just opened the door and I was outside. And it was on like a cool winter's evening, and the rain was sprinkling, and I felt it on my face. And I thought, I recognise this place. And I looked down the road and I could see the lights on the top of my gates. And the next time I woke up, because I used to wake up in severe pain, and they used to have to wash me, put more morphine in me, and I'd go back into this world again. I woke up and my wife was there, because she visited me every day, and I just said to her, "Don't worry, I'm gonna live." And she went, "How do you know?" I said, "Don't worry, I'm gonna live."
Wow.
And pulled through it.
Amazing.
So.
And how long after that did you go back to work?
It took a year.
Yeah.
It took a year to recover.
And there was never a doubt in your mind about, I'm going back.
No, it's what I do.
Yeah.
There was, they couldn't, because no one had ever survived it before, all they could say to me, like the orthopaedic surgeon, they did a brilliant job, by the way. Everyone done a brilliant job. NHS, fantastic. They just said that you've got to wait 18 months. So whatever you feel in 18 months, that's as good as you're going to get. So, yeah, I got rid of the colostomy. I had a colostomy bag. I got rid of that. I learned how to wee again. I learned how to... They didn't know whether I was going to be able to... The only thing they said to me was, you will walk out of this hospital, but you don't know how far you were from becoming a paraplegic.
Right.
So, do you know what I mean? I count myself lucky. And it took me ages to get off all the pills and everything. But now I'm back. I'm doing a thing for Grand Tour next week. I'm jumping off a top of a car transporter, a pipe ramp in a car. I T-boned an ambulance in a lorry yesterday for EastEnders.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm back in amongst it. Stair falls, car knockdowns, I'm probably going to swerve those now. Yeah. Too long.
But you've done your fair share.
I've done my fair share. So, I mean, the mountain biking now, not the motocross. So that's good, keep myself ticking over.
Yeah.
Keeps you sharp as well, you know what I mean? I've got an electric mountain bike, I think they're the future.
Jesus. That's amazing. I mean, what is it you love about it? What is it that keeps taking you back to it and being part of this world?
It's in me. It's just, it's part of my genetic makeup.
Yeah.
I didn't know, as a kid, I used to dream about it. I had a really weird experience once. I don't know how young I was, but I remember watching this film and it was like a swashbuckling film. Someone jumped, it jumped off of a staircase and grabbed hold of a chandelier and swung across the room and with a sword in their hand and like chopped at someone else and they fell backwards. And it just stuck in my mind. Then one day I was on a thing called Wind in the Willows, and we were having a big food fight, and I was a weasel. And Mark Boyle, God bless him, he's dead now. He said to me, "Oh, I've got a job for you." He said, "I want you to swing across the room in a chandelier with a baguette in your hand and twat one of the other weasels." And I didn't even think about it. But it wasn't until I got on the thing, I jumped off the staircase, and as I was swinging through the air, I went, "Oh my God!" Like, it was like a deja vu moment, and that was like, I'm living the dream. My memory went straight back to when I was a kid, and remembered that. Was seeing that, and I think I'm doing it. I'm doing what I'm supposed to do.
I'm about to hit this weasel.
Yeah. Oh, right. It was a baguette and not a sword, but
you can't have it all.
No. No. Yeah, it's good.
That's brilliant. Awesome. Derek, thank you so much, man.
No problem.
Thank you very much. All right, thanks again to Derek Lee for joining us. We hope you've enjoyed our first episode on Cunning Stunts. We'll have another one for you next week. Until then, take care. Ripple Production podcast series produced by myself, David Holmes, and Amy Stairs. Sound recording, editor, and music by Joe Lamb. To find out more about us, please visit our website, www.rippleproductions.co.uk, or follow us on Facebook and Instagram.